I heard a great quote years ago. God plucked it into my head on my way to church today, and then I lost it about 10 minutes later, and I panicked because I should have written it down, but I was driving. And I was driving the Mini, which takes all of my concentration. And so when we got here and we were praying before the service, I said, Lord, please help me to remember. I know it was important, or you wouldn't have told me. And I cannot tell you, as I was pacing back and forth downstairs in my study / storeroom and saying, God, I know it was important. Please help me to remember. Please help me to remember. In fact, Wayne and a couple of others prayed that God would help me to remember it. Guess when God brought it back to my mind? The last worship song that I'm singing, and all of a sudden, there it came. So as soon as I got done when Julia was doing the announcement, I just wrote it down really quick. Here's the quote. If the only tool that you have is a hammer, pretty soon everything will start looking like a nail. Is that great? And I'll tell you, the devil will see to it that everything starts looking like a nail. If the only tool that you have in your toolbox is something to pound on things with, you'll find lots of stuff to pound on. I know so many people like this. I know people like this who've destroyed churches. I know people like this who've destroyed movements of God. They are the kind of people that all they really know how to do is criticize. And of course, it's not judgment and it's not criticism to them because they're right. It was great, Mike, that we had that conversation, because guys that love the truth can be misled, can be misled into thinking that our job is to straighten everybody else out. And if you don't know this, I have good news for you. The same thing God told me. Bob, your job is not to be right. Your job is to teach the truth as best you know it, but your job is not to be the Holy Spirit. You can't see into somebody's heart. You don't know their thoughts. You don't know why people do things. The minute the thought crosses your mind that you know why somebody did something, little warning lights should go off. Oh, they're thinking. Bob, you don't know what anybody is thinking. But the devil gets away with this all the time, doesn't he? You know how many times it's almost destroyed our church? No church is immune. It is harder to split a church where people genuinely love each other, but the statistics of Christian marriage ought to tell us that you're not immune from this kind of thing, even if you're a Christian. The enemy loves to divide. He loves to work in my heart. He loves to find a subject that pushes my buttons. And Jesus said, you know, you guys, you just need to not be that kind of person. Because it's not going to pay off. It's going to, the way that you are, you're going to just teach people how to be that way. Last week I used an example, or was it Wednesday? I can't remember, because we talked about this Wednesday. Pastor friend of mine in Idaho. He came from a very legalistic background. In fact, his legalistic background was even worse because his father was the pastor. So his father wasn't a good father, he wasn't a good pastor, so this guy has two really bad examples of what God is like in his life. And God finally escaped, but he didn't run towards God. People hardly ever do. In that situation, he ran away from God. He looked at that and said, well, if that's what God is like, that isn't it. But God found him. God taught him what God's heart was really like. And when I met him, he was pastoring in a certain church in Idaho that I came to sing at. I won't tell you his name, but he and his wife and I were talking about this. She was also a minister's daughter, and she had a very similar experience. And he talked about his father's big deal, you know, amongst other subjects that he hammered on people, was divorce. He would hound people who went through really a hard thing anyway, and then when you, instead of receiving any kind of hope or comfort or encouragement, they just got pounded further by their church, which just drove them farther and farther away. He was just a Nazi. He was a Nazi kind of a guy. And after my friend escaped and, you know, spent 10 years away, after this man had been ministering for 30 years, his wife finally just couldn't stand it, and his wife left him. And now all of the people he'd been ministering to for 30 years were hounding him and pounding on him. And my friend heard about the situation with his father. His father was absolutely suicidal. And so my friend traveled across the country, and he went and he sat with his father in his father's room, and his father just sat there and wept and wept and wept. My friend didn't really know what to say, and he sat down, and they weren't a touchy-feely kind of a family. You can't be that way with people like that. But he just got brave, and he sat down, and he put his arms around his dad, and he says, "It's not fair. You poured out your life for those people for 30 years. It's not fair for them to treat you this way." And his father started sobbing, and his father shrugged off his arm, and he said, "That's not why I'm weeping." He said, "I'm weeping because I taught him how to do this. I'm weeping with shame. All I'm experiencing right now is that I've taught these people how to act this way." Isn't that a poignant example? And none of us are really immune to this. And you know what? Here's Jesus' own disciples. And he's saying, "You guys, you just got to not be this way." Now, there's a wonderful quote, and I wrote it down. I wrote down where it's found. It's in John. John 5:30. Jesus said, "I don't judge anything by what I see, but only by what I hear from my Father in heaven." Is that a staggering statement? I don't judge any circumstance. I don't judge any people. I don't condemn people. I don't try to figure out where they're coming from based on anything that I see, but only on what I hear from the Father. John 5:30, write it down, because that's, I believe, where verses 7 and 8 come in to this teaching: asking, seeking, and knocking. So, verse 2, "In the same way that you judge others, you'll be judged by others. The same measure that you use will be used with you." As I said, I had to underline that because it is a principle of God's kingdom. Jesus applied it to three things. It's just one of those laws of the universe, like gravity. What goes up must come down. In the gravity-driven world, anyway. So, three principles of God's kingdom: that the measure you use is the measure that will be used for you. On three subjects: judgment, right here. On the subject of forgiveness. Isn't that interesting? And on the subject of giving. Now, the irony of the church I was raised in was I heard all kinds of sermons on giving. They were always begging for money. And they preached, well, you know, if you put a lot in, then God will give you a lot back, which I wanted to, even as a kid, I saw how bogus that was. I thought, well, then you're not really giving, are you? If you're just giving because God's going to give you 10 times as much back, you're not giving anything to God. It's a bribe. It's not giving at all. You think God's stupid? He doesn't know that? Here, I'll pretend I'm giving to you because you're going to give back to me. It's silly. But the irony is that the same principle Jesus applied to judging. The standard that you use, the measure that you use, is the one people are going to use for you. So it's very, like my friend in Idaho, it's very easy for people to be slowly but surely creating the instrument of their own demise. Ever heard the popular song, Teach Your Children Well? That's a very poignant one. Oh, there's a lot of them. There were a lot of songs in that era that said, you know what? Your kids are going to turn out to be just like you're teaching them to be. You didn't have time for them. They're not going to have time for you. Just a real simple thing. Like worry, last week, boy, I felt like I was dancing through a minefield last week. But a lot of people learn how to worry from their parents. Kids don't know how to worry. They're taught how to worry. They're pretty much carefree. And the irony is you can carry that on generation to generation to generation. The same thing is true about being judgmental. All black people are fill in the blank. All blondes are fill in the blank. I was raised in a very legalistic Pentecostal church, and we were absolutely positive that Baptists were not going to go to heaven. You know, the irony is the people we have in our church here that were raised Baptists thought that Pentecostals were not going to go to heaven. Well, they can't really be Christians. They smoke. They don't all smoke. But, you know, just pick something. It's just the list. The list that people have by which we make judgments about people. Oh, he only has long hair because he's a rebel. Well, maybe he's just grown it while he can. Maybe he likes it long. Maybe he's not rebellious at all. It's interesting that if women are attractive, people who are not attractive assume that they're egomaniacs. Do you know some of the most self-conscious people that I've ever met, the people who hated their looks the most, were very attractive people, and yet they're very often totally misjudged. People with certain kinds of talent, especially musical talent, people often think, oh, they're just stuck on themselves. And there are a few like that, but most of the people that I know like that aren't stuck on themselves at all. I know people that throw up before they play in front of other people. They're driven by not feeling superior. It's just so easy to make wrong judgments, isn't it? Don't you hate it when somebody does that to you? God has he's got such a great sense of humor. Some of my very favorite people I've ever met in my life, especially back in the days when I was way more judgmental than I am, before I got to know Jesus' heart, I saw them. I'm not looking at you, Paul, but I know Paul and I do the very same thing. We judge people by the kind of car they drive. With me, it's Buicks. With him, it's Volvos. You know, when you log a million miles a year on the road, you see certain behavior patterns. Do you know that my favorite person in the whole world, even though she sleeps in church sometimes, drives a Buick? So see, then I've got to kind of adjust my whole thinking on that, don't I? I can just write off everybody. But see, when somebody driving a Buick does something really goofy, I say, see? So don't be like your pastor, okay? But you train other people to be that way, and the measure you use is the measure that... God has nailed me a bunch of times on this when I have been kind of ticked off at God that he was not smiting somebody. Lord, why are you letting them get away with this? God, why isn't there not some serious smiting going on here? And they should have learned by now, God... They're Christians. Why aren't you straightening them out? And after ranting for a while, the Lord will say, now, is that going to be the new rules that we have now? The new rules are going to be, I give everybody what they deserve, which including you. Well, no. Actually, see, I still want it to be mercy and grace for me. I still want for you to just bend over backwards to be merciful and gracious, but I want you to smite them. You see how God can't do that? Isn't it weird what a double standard that we have? So God says, okay. You know what this is? This is Peter coming to Jesus and saying, okay, Lord, how many times do we have to forgive somebody? Seven? He was counting, wasn't he? And Jesus said, that's frustrating thing where he said, 70 times 7. Can you just hear it going through Peter's mind, 70 times 7, think, but I'll lose count. There you go. I personally think, and I'd say this from personal experience, I think there would be a lot fewer divorces in the world if husbands and wives could just do this one thing. I know there'd be a lot fewer church splits, and there'd be a lot more Christians that could speak to one another. And you know the irony of all of this? While Jesus was saying this to his disciples, they didn't get it. For years, they didn't get it. They eventually did. But they had to be around Jesus a lot. They had to watch him a lot. They eventually had to be filled with the Holy Spirit so that they could actually live like Jesus. And he did change them. But these are seeds that were planted, just like I'm hoping are planted with you. I love the whole plank eye thing that he talks about here because it's such a common disease with church. It is hypocrisy. Even Jesus uses the word. But hypocrisy is one of those things that we always think other people are guilty of, but not us. So I find these very, very sobering words. Like I said, this was a lot more convicting when I was married, because I had daily examples of how I did this wrong. Being single, I have nobody to disagree with me except my kitty. Unless I hang around with him, he won't disagree with me because I feed him. So, and the more time you spend alone, the easier it is to have the plank eye thing. I've gotten very upset at waitresses for not paying enough attention to me, for being sloppy, and I've had all kinds of offensive thoughts, I'm ashamed to say it, and then had Jesus defend them in my heart and say, you don't know what kind of a day she had. You don't know how hard she has to work just to make ends meet. You know nothing about her life. And son, it's not all about you. And of course, he's right. Let's look at the plank eye thing. A couple of things that we can really learn from this. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye? What's a speck of sawdust made out of? Wood, okay. So why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? What's a plank made out of? Okay, so we're talking about the same basic material, aren't we? Only it's a tiny, tiny little bit of that material in this person's life. It's huge in my life, but it's basically the same deal. I heard somebody say something, it might have been my pastor, Chuck Smith. He said, when you are listening to preachers, take note of the ones that harp on a certain sin. The ones that harp on a certain sin. He said, mark it down, that's their personal problem, because it's that transference thing that we do. We transfer our own motives to other people. Sometimes subconsciously we do. Suspicious people or dishonest people are suspicious of other people's honesty. We attribute motives to other people. So the material of the speck and the material of the plank are the very same material. And he's pointing out just how illogical that is. Here's something I learned when I was married. My faults look so much more intolerable on somebody else than they do on me. Now, when you're single, you can kind of get away with sort of ruminating on that. But I tell you, when you're married and there's somebody in your face and you're starting to get irritated by their irritating behavior, it's like looking in the mirror if you have the Holy Spirit in you. Because pretty soon, the Lord will say, but You're just like that.
Well, I suppose you could interpret it that way, but, you know, it's not really, that's really not the way I mean to be.
Well, maybe they don't mean to be that way either. You know what I mean? This is true of children and parents. Whether you're the parent or the child or both, go in either direction. Before you get up a really good head of steam, just look at who's fanning the fire, for one thing. That is a tip-off. If there are little sizzling brimstone footprints anywhere near your body, you may be very suspicious as to where you're getting this information about their motives and, you know, what an unreasonable person they are. Jesus said, hey, if you really truly want to help somebody with eye surgery and really take that speck of injurious material, it's not a bad thing to do. But he said, just make sure you've dealt with your own stuff. Remember, he says, then you'll be able to say, to see clearly, to remove the speck. You know what that means? That means I'm not really going to be able to help anybody with their stuff if I haven't dealt with the stuff that I have. And again, what are church people famous for? It breaks my heart. I saw a bumper sticker out in Washington State before I moved here, and it said, Dear Jesus, please save me from your followers. You know, it was like an arrow in my heart because I said, however scathing that is, I know exactly how that person feels. But I'm one of his followers. Is that the way I am? Verses 4 and 5, he says, you know, how can you say, let me take the speck out of your eye when there's one in your own eye? First take the plank out of your own eye. Psalm 51, I had you write down. I just saw this a couple years ago. It's interesting. I'd never applied this to this teaching. This is the repentant psalm. This is the one where David finally sees himself clearly for what a sinner he is. Remember the story? Nathan the prophet came on behalf of God to confront David, and he came in the sneaky way. He told a story. He told a story about a lamb. He told a story about a self-serving, greedy shepherd who destroyed the life of a young lamb that was precious to somebody else. David, being a shepherd, was incensed. He wanted to go string this guy up. How dare this man do that? And Nathan looks at him and says, you're the man. And then all of a sudden, this is the first moment that David became convicted about what he did with Bathsheba and Uriah. And that's one of the reasons I love Psalm 51.